Good morning, and welcome to Focus 580. It's our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're also very pleased to have back here on the program Sandy Mason. She is horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. And once a month on a Tuesday, she is here, and we talk about lawn and garden care, things that grow in the home landscape. And we can answer a wide range of questions. We've talked about all kinds of stuff, about ornamental plants, things that you can eat, house plants, trees, shrubs, turf grass, any and all of that. Maybe you are having a problem and you still need to get it solved. Maybe even at this point you're thinking about planting something, or maybe it's, you know, the fall, it's not unheard of to be planting things, perennials in the fall. So maybe you're thinking about, you know, things that you're still going to put in the ground this year. Questions on any and all of that is certainly welcome. 333-9455. That's the Champaign Urbana number. We do also have a toll-free line, and that one anywhere that you can hear us, 800-222-9455. Glad to have you here again.
Good morning.
Again.
Good morning.
We were just talking here a little bit about the fact that this, at least this summer, probably the big thing that people had to be thinking about was that we haven't gotten a lot of rain. And when we do get it, we get these monsoonal outbursts where we get 3-4 inches in one day. And here I'm looking at our rain gauge here. So far today we've gotten 0.3 inch, and I think for the all so far in August we got almost here in Champaign-Urbana we got almost nothing. So still,
wow. Still. So 3/10 sounds like a lot.
3/10,
it
does sound like a lot. And maybe it looks like actually we'll get some more today and over the next couple of days. But, you know, again, the big thing is it's been dry and people need to make sure that they're doing watering probably, and particularly if there are plants, particular plants that they're really concerned about, young trees, you know, anything like that, you'd better make sure that they get adequate water.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's sometimes the thing we don't always think about, especially with trees. Yeah. I think a lot of times people think it's, well, the first year I put it in, that's all I have to water it, and I don't have to worry about it. But really, we don't really consider young trees to be established. At least they ought to be 3 years old before you really stop worrying quite so much, but certainly 5 years. So it takes them a while to get established. So just because a tree was put in, you know, a couple of years ago, I'd sure plan on watering it on a regular basis just to make sure that it doesn't have problems. And if you kind of think about the things that if you really have a, you know, you don't want to water everything necessarily, so you kind of have to decide, now, how much is this going to cost if I truly have to replace this plant? Well, if you had a tree in there for a couple of years, maybe you initially paid some money for it, that's a sizable investment there. So that's certainly a place you want to make sure that you take some time to go ahead and water them. You know, sometimes with perennials, some of those, you know, if you really had to make some choices, you may find that maybe those are the ones that you kind of decide, well, I'm going to water them every once in a while, every couple of weeks or something, rather than on a regular basis.
Yeah. Well, I think you can, at least in my yard, I know that there are certain things that seem, even though it's been fairly dry, certain things that seem to be, you know, they're doing okay, and other things that look a little peaked. And so I think what you can do is strategically say that if the lawn goes kind of brown, fine, I don't care. And that everything else seems to be looking okay, but you can tell the things that really need it. So make sure the things that really need it get the water. And a lot of other things, I think it'll just, you know, they'll be okay, unless we actually got into a drought situation, which I don't think we're there. We're dry, but we're not that bad.
Right. And it is, you know, it is a natural thing. I know it doesn't look all that great to have lawns go brown, but that is a natural thing. We have cool season grasses. That's their natural thing, to go dormant in the hot, dry season. And so, you know, if they're at least getting maybe 0.5 inch of water every 3 weeks or so, somewhere in there, you're not going to green them up at that, but they shouldn't die. Sometimes you kind of have to make that criteria on whether you're going to go ahead and water or not, on whether I'm going to actually going to water it to the point where it greens up. And it's always a good idea, you know, don't water it to the point where it gets green, and then you get the water bill, and then you decide the water bill's too high, and then you quit watering, and then it goes brown again, and then you don't like the look of the brown, so you go back to watering again, and then you get so you go through this cycle. Well, that's not good for the grass. It really does use up a lot of their food reserve. So make a decision. I'm either going to go ahead and water it on a regular basis, keep it green, I'm just going to let it go dormant, and don't make it cycle through this dormancy thing.
Yeah. Are there any particular plants that are, you know, common in the home landscape, things that people generally like, particularly, I guess I'm thinking about various kinds of perennials, that you would say right off, oh, I know this thing it just got to have a lot of water, and you just need to make sure that if you do nothing else, that this particular things, just make sure that they get well watered.
Yeah, I think probably the things that come to mind first would be things like astilbe. I think that's one of the shade type plants. Mm-hmm. They really suffer if they go dry, to the point where they might even die. So they're really kind of sensitive, especially when we get these high temperatures, which is the other reason why this has been pretty tough, is that not only if we had a drought, but we've had above average temperatures for the most part too. So that doesn't help matters either. So you couple those two together. So astilbes would be one. Certainly ferns would be another one that I'd be a little concerned about, especially maidenhair ferns. They're very sensitive to dryness. A lot of other plants, you know, they'll wilt. They might get some yellow leaves, but, you know, we have a lot of plants that will tolerate. You know, purple coneflower is a really popular plant. It's one that will tolerate. If it's been established for a couple of years, it may, you know, kind of wilt a little bit, but usually they're very good at getting through these drought periods.
Yeah. So. Well, that's another thing that people might want to think about, actually things that really are going to be drought tolerant. They're going to tolerate the heat that we can have when it's really dry. And so that if you would like to have the idea that you're going to have a yard that's, if it's going to be dry, it's going to be okay. It might not look beautiful, but stuff's not going to die.
Right. And if you think of all the native prairie plants that are available now, even in the home retail industry, you know, whether it's purple coneflower or whatever, a lot of the sunflower type flowers, a lot of those tolerate drought very well because they're used to. That's what they kind of grew up with, is kind of those dry periods. So even some of the native plants that we have certainly are ones that, you know, we think about prairie dock and some of those that have roots that can be 13 feet deep. So that's, you know, it's got plenty of reserves there looking for water. So you know, if you think about some of those plants, they're meant to tolerate these kind of conditions.
All right. Got a couple callers here. We'll start with someone in Paris. Line 4. Hello.
Yes, I planted elephant ears for the first time this year. They're doing really well. I'm really not sure what to expect as the season goes on and how to take care of them into the fall. Can you help me out with that?
Sure. Actually, elephant ear has gotten so popular. That's those ones that look like, you know, they have big ears, like giant elephant ears. They are tropical, so they're actually loving this kind of weather. If you're giving them plenty of water, which you must be, or it probably would have been suffering by now, because they do like moisture, some of them more so than others. And then once it starts to get cold, they are tropical plants. And so once it starts to get cold, I wouldn't let them go through a hard freeze, but most of them produce a bulb-like thing that you can dig up, and then you just keep it over the winter like you would an amaryllis bulb or whatever. You can just keep it and then plant it again.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Sure.
Oh, okay. Next, we'll talk to someone in Piatt County. This is line 1. Hello.
Good morning.
Hi.
I have a couple of questions, and I'll try to be fast. Number one, I planted the annual. Is it Cleome or Cleome, the spider plants? And they were so strikingly beautiful, and then they've just gotten so awful looking, really long and straggly.
Yeah.
Can they be cut back? Will they, if I keep them watered, will they continue to?
Is this just the straight species, or was it a name attached to it, just that spider flower, Cleome? Was there a name attached to it? Do you remember?
It was the Dazzler, maybe.
Oh, okay. Because I've had pretty good luck. The Sparkler series actually is pretty good, where it's compact. I guess what I was getting at, some of the older ones, they just do that. To trim them back, I don't know how well they're going to come out of that, to be honest with them.
Okay.
I think that's kind of their nature. That's why I think some of the, I'm not sure about the Dazzler, but the Sparkler series, I've seen really good results with those. They tend to stay more compact, and I just looked at some the other day out at the Hartley Garden, and they look great. So I think some of those newer varieties might be a good choice for next time.
The second thing is that I'm going to be moving out to a couple of acres, and there's a ditch that's just been mowed, and I was wondering if, you know, my coneflowers are kind of starting to go back now. Get kind of straggly looking also. Can you cut the heads off the coneflowers and throw them, like, in the ditch? Would they come back?
Well,
you know,
I guess
like as a
reseeding? Yeah, they certainly do reseed, and they'll reseed in place. You'll find that really quickly, that they'll reseed right where they are, and they do a darn good job of that.
They do.
I don't know. In the ditch, the problem is in a ditch bank is that normally it's so thick with turf of some kind, it's really hard for the seeds to get in. They do much better if you have some open areas.
Mm-hmm.
So if you truly wanted to do that, I think I would probably spend a little bit more time and going ahead and, you know, collecting the seeds and actually open up a few areas. They don't tolerate the turf thing too well.
Okay, that's good to know. And then the second thing is, when I move this fall, about transplanting. I saw in the Chicago Tribune they said that you shouldn't be transplanting much after September 15th, but that's still pretty hot and dry here.
Yeah, probably for the Chicago area, that probably makes sense. Usually we say through the month of September, and generally you're in pretty good shape.
And does that include hostas? Because I'd really like to take some of my big hostas out.
I think that's fine. I had really most, other than bearded irises, that's about the only thing we'd say that probably isn't a good idea to do it late season. But most things do a darn good job of if you do it in September, if you don't wait too late, then they're fine. So I guess the long answer to your question was yes.
Should you cut them back, you know, cut off their leaves? Or
I would just leave it all on, whatever's manageable, because they'll go ahead and use up what food reserves are there. And so let it do that. And if it's, and if you, you know, obviously water them and stuff, sometimes they actually do rebound a little bit. Actually, hostas are pretty good at rebounding.
Okay. Well, thanks so much for your help.
Sure. All right. Well, thanks for the call. I think there are probably a lot of people don't really think about planting things in September, but there are a lot of things you can plant at end of season. And I'm sure that there are probably a lot of places that sell plants that have good sales on perennials,
those
things that you can put in the ground there if you get them in, that, say, at least the two within the first 2 weeks of September, they're fine, and then they'll just get going next spring.
And pretty much the way we've had our falls and stuff, we've had fairly, you know, warm temperatures come sometimes clear into December, where it's been fairly warm. So it's, I think it's a good way to get some bargains on some plants. I think you have to be careful, obviously, about what you're buying, and just make sure, you know, I would just really check it and make sure, because sometimes they don't look all that great in pots at this point, especially a lot of the perennials. But you'd want to, like, gently tug on the stem, make sure that it's well seated there and not rotted off, anything like that. So usually you can have a pretty good idea if there's some good a good crown to a plant and feel pretty confident that it's going to do well for you.
Okay. Champagne, next caller, line two, right here. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. For your conversation about watering everything, that's why it's nice to have a nice mix of weeds.
They do darn well in this weather, don't they?
Darn it, weeds are just there. They'll put up with anything.
We just need to change what we think is pretty, right?
Yeah, well, green's good.
Green's good. Sounds like a good T-shirt.
So I'm always big on green. Yeah.
I think I should make a T-shirt. Green is good.
You mentioned the native plants and grasses. Is there an event this fall where, you know, in Champaign-Urbana or somewhere, where they get together or something or other? These different associations, and it sort of behooves me to remember what the names of them are.
Oh, like Grand Prairie Friends and some of those get together?
Yeah. I'm not.
Well, I think they have an annual meeting, but I'm not sure if you're thinking about some event thing. I'm not aware of it. Maybe someone who's listening is aware of it and can let us know about that.
Now, what's the annual meeting? When is that, or what's...
I really don't know. I think probably your best bet would be to, do you have internet access?
Sure.
They do have a website. I would just go, just Grand Prairie Friends, and I'm sure they list their meetings in there rather than me guessing. But they generally have an annual meeting later on in the season where they get together.
Okay.
September, October, something like that.
Isn't one that where they exchange seeds and stuff, or not?
I'm not aware of that, to be honest with you. I think within the organizations they do those kinds of things. But again, maybe someone who's listening knows that there's some event. Or are you thinking everybody gets together and does kind of a seed exchange? It'd be a good idea.
Okay. Well, I'll listen then.
Okay.
All right. Thanks for the call. Well, we just go right on here to another caller, and next, someone in Champaign, line number one.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
I have two questions. I have a rosa bush that has a lot of yellow spotted leaves, and I wondered what that was.
So this is a rose bush? Is that what you said?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. It could be. Do they also have black spots?
Yeah.
Black and yellow? Okay.
Yes.
That's a great thing about diseases. It's a disease called black spot. Good figure. Those plant pathologists. So it is a fungal disease, and it is fairly common with some roses. Some of them actually have some resistance to it. So it is one of those diseases that we often see. It is a fungus. The one thing about it is that once it starts to appear, the best thing would actually have been to get it on a spray program if you decide that that's something you want to do. So it's kind of control. You're protecting those leaves against infection. So in other words, if the whole thing already has black spot, you know, it's not going to help you a whole lot unless it starts putting on new leaves, which it still might do this time of year.
Yeah, it's not all the leaves.
Yeah. So, okay.
Well,
so,
I'm not into spring. So.
Well, then you can, what I was going to say, too, is that generally it's not life-threatening for the plant.
Oh.
Usually they do just fine, and they'll drop, they usually drop a lot of leaves.
Yes.
They'll go ahead and turn yellow. They'll drop a lot of leaves. But generally it doesn't kill the plant.
Uh-huh.
So you might just decide, well, you know, this is just the way it is, and I really like this rose, and I'm going to keep it. Or you might decide you want to look for some of the disease-resistant varieties, because there's plenty of those out there, too.
Yeah, well, this is a very old.
Oh, which doesn't surprise me. A lot of the older ones, unfortunately, get black spots. So you may just plant something big in front of it, and by the end of the season, you won't worry about it too much.
Now, my second question is, I have some Weigelia, and I was told that they flower during the summer. Mine flowered once early, and they haven't flowered since.
So did you do any pruning or anything like that?
No.
Okay. So when you say early, what are you saying early?
Oh, I can't remember, but, you know, I think in the spring maybe. Or
May?
I didn't notice the date, but it seemed like it flowered either very early summer or late spring.
Okay. And it could very well have. There's a couple of different of the Weigellas. Most of them do bloom on old wood, the wood from the year before. And so that's why it's important not to prune them too late in the season or prune them too early.
I didn't really prune them.
Okay. Okay. And then there are some of them that actually do bloom also on new wood, and so they'll continue their bloom, but some of them don't.
When I bought it, I was told that it was...
that it would continue to bloom?
Yeah, I think
But
they don't all do that.
Yeah. And this is a fairly young one, though? Is that what you said?
I just planted it last year.
Okay. Then I'd give it some time. You know, for a lot of the shrubs, it really does take them a couple of years before they get well established and they really start flowering well. So I have a feeling it may be just part of that. If you were told that it could, and a lot of them do continue to bloom, at least sporadically, it's not as big as that first bloom, but I have a feeling I continue to water it and take care of it, but I have a feeling the next couple of years it'll do much better for you.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Sure.
All right. Thanks for the call. Just in case anybody's interested, I have now pulled up the website for the Grand Prairie Friends, and anybody who's got the internet access can look at that. I'm not seeing any events scheduled for this fall. It looks like a couple of their big things are in the spring. They had their annual winter membership meeting in March, this past March, at the Anita Purvis Nature Center, and then they have a plant sale, and that was in May. So that would be the kind of things that if people are really interested in getting involved in the organization, they could look forward to that next year. And I'm sure that there would be information available now on what it is they do and on what you need to do to be a member. And, you know, you can find out more about what they do. But the time to really be heavily into that is going to be next year. So in the spring when things really start going.
Yeah, they have a great plant sale. People are interested in native plants.
I think, isn't that also about the same time the Herb Society does their
plant sale? Yes, they pretty much do it all the same time. I think it's like the second weekend, maybe, in May,
that would sound,
something like that, second weekend in May or something like that. Right. But the Herb Society usually has their sale, too, so you can get a lot of great plants.
Yeah, very good. Okay. And also, it's a great source of information, too, because those folks have spent a lot of time learning about growing all those various kinds of things. So if you have questions about native plants or about herbs, you know, that would be a great information base. Let's talk next with somebody else in Champaign, line 3. Hello. So caller there in Champaign, line 3. Well, okay. How about Robinson, line 4? Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Sandy, I have a comment and later a question on two different subjects. First, the early part of the program has been about watering.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to urge something which an old Scots gardener taught me years ago, which I see violated over and over. That is, water the soil, not the plants.
Yep.
I see young women who are hired here in my hometown to water the plantings around the courthouse, and they use a big spray and waste half the water evaporating in the air and half on the pavement, and very little can get to the roots.
Yep. You're absolutely right. And actually, it's to hold down also fungal diseases if you keep the water off the foliage. So there's a lot of good reasons. So you're absolutely right, and I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, that's something we don't always talk about. That's why soaker hoses are really nice. If people can set up soaker hoses, it's a very efficient way to to water. So, yeah, thanks for mentioning that.
Okay, now to the question. I grow a great many roses, and in past years, the Japanese beetles have been a pain to me. I could easily trap in my little soapy water cup 200 and 300 a day, and I'd have to go out 2 and 3 times a day to perform this routine. But this year, the infestation was way, way down. Have you heard this report from others?
Yeah, I actually, yes, I've heard it from other people, and I've also, I experienced it in my own yard. I was just ready for the onslaught, and next thing I knew, they weren't nearly as bad. So I've heard quite a few people tell me. So I'm hoping that's a trend.
Lord,
I'm hoping that's a trend.
The only thing I might begin to attribute it to is the late freeze we had in April. Perhaps the grubs were working their way up towards the top of the soil and got bitten. But I'm glad to hear somebody else, because I was afraid that if I mentioned it, I would put a high bush on the occurrence. Thank you for your help.
Yeah. Oh, right. Great. Yeah, I'm hoping that's a trend. But then I did talk to some people that are farther west than us that got it for the first year, for the first time this year. So they're certainly moving their way west. But you know, that's they fly quite a ways and can fly quite a ways. So whether they're just expanding their territory, I also wondered if it was just a matter of how dry it was. You know, fairly early in the season, actually, when they should have been, the grubs should have been emerging and become adult. It was really pretty dry, so I'm kind of wondering about that, too. So maybe we got lucky this year.
Yeah, okay. Well, that is true from year to year. The conditions are different, there'll be years that are not so good for them and years that are good for them.
Right.
And I guess you never really quite know what.
And unfortunately, they have a wide range of how much cold that they'll tolerate. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they certainly can tolerate some pretty cold temperatures. So sometimes even if we have a really cold winter, it doesn't necessarily mean we're going to have less of them.
Yeah. Okay. Champagne's next, line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have two questions, Sandy. The first is I have a couple of lupins, and I love them very much, but I'm wondering, I understand you can get them to flower again if you cut them down, but how far do you cut them?
So they've already flowered once?
Yes.
And I would just remove the old stalks? Is that what you're thinking?
Well, all the way down to... you know, a couple of inches from the ground or what?
Yeah, I would just remove the stalk completely.
Completely.
Yeah.
All right. Because I've just taken the tops off and that doesn't seem to do a thing.
Yeah, no, they'll actually send up new shoots. If you get them, lupins really don't like hot weather. So you're doing something wonderful by keeping them this long in this hot of weather. So that's
really
great. Yeah, they don't like hot weather.
Well, they take a lot of attention.
Yep. But good for you for getting them to go. But don't be too surprised if they don't flower for you again simply because of the hot weather.
All right. The second question, I have two huge red oaks out in front which shade my lawn, and there are cobwebs in many places on the lawns now. Is this a time to, I guess those are grubs? That are down below the surface.
So you're seeing, I guess I'm not sure I understand. You're seeing cobwebs across the surface of the soil or across the grass?
The grass, yes.
Well, the cobwebs are probably just strictly spiders. Because grubs don't produce cobwebs or anything along those lines.
Oh, is that right?
Right.
Oh.
So, yeah, the grubs actually normally are underneath the soil, or they're feeding on the roots.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this time of year, they'd be feeding on the roots.
Well, so how do you know that you have grubs? Well, you do.
Right. Usually you'll see brown patches.
Oh.
And generally they like open areas. They really don't like necessarily underneath trees and stuff so
I
much.
See.
They generally like more open areas. They often are near lights that you keep on at night because they're kind of attracted to lights at night. So it's usually those kind of spots. But you see a kind of a brown spot, and then it seems to get bigger. And then if you just grab on to the brown grass, it'll just pull back like a rug.
Yes.
Because they've eaten off the roots. And so that's how you really know you got grubs, because there's no roots left. So
I see. So right. The spiders like shady lawn.
Yep. Well, they don't want to hang out in the sun either.
So evidently the mushrooms do too.
Yes, mushrooms do too. So I think you're just seeing, you know, just a few things going on there, not necessarily bad things.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
All right, thank you. Bye-bye. We're about midway through here. Our program with Sandy Mason, she's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Once a month on a Tuesday, she's here. We talk about lawn and garden care, how to take care of things that grow in the home landscape. If you have a problem and you need some advice, or maybe, again, as I said at the beginning, you're thinking about planting some things in the next month or so, you can still do that. And if you need some advice or suggestions, give us a call. 333-9455. That's the number to use if you are here in Champaign-Urbana, where we are. Also, we do have the toll-free line, 800-222-9455. And next, we'll talk with someone in Danville. Line 4. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I have four blueberry bushes that really struggled after the freeze last spring.
Mm-hmm.
And I have lost a bunch of branches, but they're bearing now. I'm picking blueberries now, and generally, you know, a couple of months ago. I don't know, is there something that I can do to avoid losing them altogether?
Mm-hmm. So have you been watering at all?
Oh, yes.
Been able to water?
Okay. Yes, but I have not done any soil amendments. And the soil, the roots seem to be so close up to the soil.
Yep.
I was thinking of adding compost in the next month or so.
Right. Which would be good, because their roots tend to be across the surface, as you found, and they really don't like these high temperatures that we've had. So mulching is real important for blueberries to keep the soil moist as well as to keep it cooler. So mulching is good, and then just a regular watering is also really important. Now, how long have you had these?
Oh, gosh. 20 years or more.
Well, you'll see some dieback of the older stems from time to time. So I don't know whether you're seeing some of that, and which is just fine because we generally would want to remove some of that anyway.
Well, even early on, the proportion of leaves to the berries was low.
Okay. So you may want to, because as you know, with blueberries, they need an acidic soil,
right,
which generally we don't have an acidic enough. It usually needs to be about 4.5 or so. So generally we're thinking about things like ammonium sulfate. If you wanted to go ahead and fertilize, that would be fine.
Yeah, I had done that in the past, but not this year. I just didn't want to encourage more growth when it was kind of tough on them anyway.
Right. So this isn't necessarily, unless you're doing a lot of watering and it cools off a little bit, that I think I'd probably wait till it cools off a little bit and then maybe go ahead and fertilize to get some new growth going. I wouldn't fertilize too late in the season. But certainly, are the leaves look nice and green at all, or are they kind of got a yellow cast?
They're pretty green.
Okay. Well, then that's good.
The other question I have is about a butterfly weed that I've had for, almost as long. And it's huge. It is about 5 feet across, and it's has encroached on my pathway around the front. Now, I understand you just can't move them because of their funny, fleshy kind of roots, but would I jeopardize the whole plant if I at least tried to dig some out along where the path is?
Okay, and just so I'm clear, now are you talking about butterfly weed or butterfly
Asclepias.
Bush?
Asclepias.
Okay, so butterfly weed, just checking.
Yeah.
You might be able to take some of it. Yeah, they don't really like to be moved all that much.
Well, no, I didn't want to move the main plant. I just wanted because it has gotten so wide.
Right.
I mean, just
that's
one
great.
Plant that huge, and it is one of those that was... for clay soil, and goodness knows I've got plenty of that. I just wanted to be able to slice off about a foot of it at the northwest edge. And I would try to transplant it because it's such a great plant.
Right, right.
But I just don't want to do anything if it's going to jeopardize the rest of the plant.
Yeah, I would think if the crown of it's that big,
yeah.
So the crown's really big, I would think you'd be able to at least slice off part of it and move that.
And
once
with a tree
it's that,
spade or with a spading fork would you use?
I'd probably use a tree spade, just okay. A regular old spade, and just make a nice slice and take it away from there. And then just make sure that you water them periodically, obviously, once you've done that. But if your crown's that big, I said usually those crowns are not very, it takes them a long time to get that big. So, I mean, that's wonderful that you've got one that big.
Well, I bought three from a nursery in Wisconsin. It was supposed to be four clay, and one of them died right away, and the other one was quite ordinary, and then this one is spectacular.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
So,
that's wonderful.
I sure don't want to lose it.
Right, right.
And it's getting plenty of play right now for the butterflies.
That's
all
a great
right,
plan.
Well, thanks for your
sure.
Help.
All right, thank you for the call. Back here to Champaign next, line one. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a question about growing impatiens in pots. Mm-hmm. I have, for a number of years, I've grown them in pots both outside and then in hanging pots on the porch. And what I noticed is towards the end of the season, it gets to a point where the leaves yellow and fall off, and the plants just sort of stop doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
But this year I said, well, let me try something new. So I, at the beginning of the season, I got a couple of hanging plants in from the nursery, and then in the middle of June I started some other ones, figuring, well, let me see if I can lengthen the season.
Mm-hmm.
And I started some other ones in pots. However, they are already yellowing their leaves and dropping them, the ones I planted in mid-June. But the pots outside that I planted, you know, early May, they're all doing just fine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so you can't see any kind of insects, or there's no spots on the leaves,
no.
Or anything like that might mm-hmm. indicate an insect or disease problem.
No.
And you feel pretty confident that you've kept them watered and
that's not an issue?
Because usually, even if they dry out once, it's one of those things where they generally yellow a few leaves just to remind you that they got dry once. And that's just the nature of them. But the new growth still looks good. It's just the older growth is turning yellow. There's just not much new growth.
Yeah.
So are you fertilizing them?
Well, I use the potting soil that has fertilizer in them. And occasionally I also use a liquid fertilizer, very, very, very low.
Yeah. I think what you might find is actually they appreciate fertilizer, and that may be one of those things. And the thing I've noticed, even with those potting mixes that have fertilizer in them,
uh-huh.
because we're watering so much, I don't think it lasts as long as they say it lasts. That's
okay.
My theory. Because it sure seems like about this time of year, the plants just start to lag, and they really need to be fertilized again.
Hmm.
So,
okay, I'll try that.
Yeah, I think that sounds, if you feel pretty confident about all the other things, then I'd say that's probably what's going on. So I do some regular fertilizing, like at least once a week, or maybe
okay.
every time you water them, even just a light fertilizer.
Mm-hmm. All righty, I'll try that. Thank you very much.
All right, thanks for the call. Let's go to Springfield, line two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes, I have two questions. One, magnolia scale. How do I treat it? And two, I've had Japanese beetles this year, worse than ever before, and is there, other than the traps, which I have 2 5-gallon buckets full of Japanese beetles, is there anything else? I put seven. I've sprayed mm-hmm. seven, mm-hmm. but my understanding, it only works on direct application to the if you catch the beetles on the plant. Is there any spray that can kind of have a residual effect?
Okay. And where are you located? Just out of curiosity.
Springfield, Illinois.
Springfield. You've had them worse than ever. Okay, so they are moving. I guess a couple on the magnolia scale, I'd really have to check, because it's real important with scale, your timing. on that. So I would actually have a very nice master gardener group there in Sangamon Menard counties. So I would give them a call and to find out for sure when the magnolia scale, when you need to spray for that, because timing is so crucial on that that I just don't know right off the top of my head. So that would be a good one to check. As far as the Japanese beetles, a couple things. Let's see. Interesting that you have them worse than ever. Seven does have some residual, so it's not that it's not doing its thing. It does have a residual. So when you spray, there is a residual, and it will kill them later. So it's not that you have to actually have spray the beetles that are on there. So it's not like insecticidal soap or something like that. So you are getting some residual. Unfortunately, that's probably one of our better sprays if you're going to use a spray, but it's toxic to bees and beneficial insects, so we always have to be real careful and figure on when we're going to do that. There are some systemics. Unfortunately, they don't work well now, but for future, you know, if you've got them really bad this year, you're probably going to have them bad again next year, and that would be something you could apply to things like roses and your woody plants, but you need to do that in March or at least by early April. So it's actually something you pour into the soil, and then the plant takes it up. And so that's something that can be used, certainly on roses and things that we know that are going to have issues, linden trees, crab apples. There's several of them that we know are going to have issues. I will tell you with the traps that generally we don't generally recommend them once you have a lot of problems with them, because you'll find they actually attract more than you catch, which I know you catch a lot, but they really do attract more than you catch. So, you know, the joke is you always put the traps in your neighbor's yard. So those are just a few thoughts on Japanese beetles, but sorry. Sorry you've got them.
Thank you.
Does that help?
That helps. Okay. What's the names of the systemics? What are the brand names?
Yeah, the chemical is called imidacloprid, but usually it's you're probably going to find it in a lot of the Bayer-type products, and I think it's one's called Bayer Tree and Shrub Insect Control would be a common one, and probably found in quite a few places. So that would be something that could be used now. There are a few other sprays that actually have a permethrin-type product in it, which could also or are fairly effective also on the existing beetles. So, but just take heart that they're not
next year, which would be the one I would apply in March or April.
That would be the Bayer Tree and Shrub Insect Control.
Okay.
You know, that one would be firm. And just read the directions. You have to apply it so much for the size of your plant, and you pour it on the soil, those kind of things. So in general, you do those in high traffic type plants where you're going to see them a lot. But take heart, they're not going to be around too much longer. Usually by the end of August, we don't see too much of them. So take heart.
Okay, thank you very much.
Right, sure. Thank you. I would think already by this point would pretty much would be.
Yeah, usually.
We'd be at the end.
Yeah, usually by the time we start getting into August, certainly the first or second week of August, they generally are starting. We're not seeing them so much, but usually by the first of September, you don't see hardly any.
Yeah, okay. Next, we'll talk with someone in Downs, line 3, right here. Hello.
Hello. Mm-hmm. Hi, Sandy. I have a question about a rose. I have a New Dawn that I planted, I think 3 years ago, mm-hmm. climbing rose. You mm-hmm. know this rose?
Mm-hmm.
And it, the first year, it just kind of languished. The second year, it grew. This year, it has grown like something possessed.
I take it that's not good.
Well, no. I mean, I think it means that the plant is healthy.
Yeah,
but
right.
It didn't bloom all that well in the spring, but we had the weird...
Yeah, we had that horrible cold spell.
Right. Mm-hmm. So I'm blaming it on that. I've gotten no rebloom at all.
Hmm.
And I'm not giving it nitrogen. There was a raccoon that decided that it was going to use that as a privy area for a little while. And I tried to, you know, to at least move it around a bit so it wasn't all in one place. But I can't figure out why it's not blooming.
Hmm.
I mean, I would think that I'd be getting some rebloom.
Yeah, the way I understand it with that rose, it blooms on old wood and new wood both.
Right.
The way I understand
it. And I've got, I mean, the new wood is just incredible. It's just ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
I also had a deer that came and ate off some of it, which was an interesting experience.
So maybe we've come up with the secret to good rose growing is you need a raccoon manure. And
except the point of roses is the bloom, kind of.
Oh, that's right. Okay, sure. I'm not sure what else is going on there. If beyond that, now, does it have a lot of just very thin types of growth coming up? So it's all very thick and
huge. Thick, you know, really nice thick canes. And
The other thing is that if you're thinking about this, I know what rose rosette is because I've had it, and it's
right.
not that.
Right.
I'm just getting nice, big, thick, healthy, you
well,
know.
That's good.
Canes. Yeah. Oh, it is so healthy looking. You wouldn't believe it.
So I wonder if it's not going to go ahead and, you know, a lot of them bloom late.
Well,
you know, it really takes them a while to get going. And sometimes I have roses that are, you know, look gorgeous in like September and even into October.
There's no sign of buds.
Well, I really can't think of anything that you're necessarily doing wrong. The raccoon thing is a little suspect, but we're not too much we can do about that. But, if it's getting plenty of sun, you're confident of that. It sounds like it's growing well. I would just give it some time. I think you may find that it actually is going to be one of those that's going to bloom kind of late for you.
Okay.
That's my guess. That maybe by the time September rolls around, you'll actually start seeing it putting on some buds. It was a very weird year for roses this year because they got hit so hard with that early frost that I think it really kind of set a lot of them back, and they're kind of out of cycle. So I wonder if that's not what's going on. You'll have to call back. Call back in October or something.
Okay.
Tell me if it bloomed or not. And see if I had any semblance of being right.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks for the call. Over to next caller is in Rantoul, and this is line one. Hello.
Hi. I have two comments. First of all, the roses seem to be out of cycle because mine are gorgeous right now.
Yeah.
The other one has to do with the Japanese beetles. Last year we were infested with them and we sprayed like crazy and we have hardly found any this year.
Yeah.
There doesn't seem to be any rhyme or reason for how or where they attack.
Yeah, it seems really odd, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we sprayed everything, the plum tree, the roses.
Right.
They got into the grapes. And I sprayed every day, twice a day, until we knocked them down. And so I can only hope that they didn't get the grubs in the ground, and that's why. But my real question is about raspberries.
Mm-hmm.
We have a very small garden plot, and we put in red raspberries, which you can imagine they're sort of taking over. And I wanted to know how I can prune those to keep them manageable. Can I prune back those really long canes that are, you know, like 7 or 8 feet high?
Are these everbearers? Do you know if there's everbearers?
So far, they've done raspberries in the spring.
Okay. So it's not like Heritage? It's a common red raspberry? Doesn't sound familiar?
As far as I know, I don't remember the name, the variety.
Okay. Probably the thing, you know, the part that once that particular cane produces, then that's it on the ones
right.
that are, okay, so those are definitely, you can cut those back. The other ones, you can shorten them depending on what kind of system you have. You probably don't want to shorten them much more than like 3 feet or so after they've produced.
And then because when they send out the runners to put out the new canes, they keep encroaching in the garden.
Yep, I know.
They don't ever go back to where they started.
They're very good. Yeah, they're very good at doing that kind of thing, unfortunately.
So eventually I would assume you could dig those up and put them in the back and kind of start.
Oh, sure. Okay. Those are very easy to transplant in the springtime, and it's a great time to do and a great way to sort of replenish the whole plot and stuff. But you can prune them back once they've kind of finished their growth.
Yeah, I think we have to.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you. Next, we'll go over to Charleston, line number four. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I'm moving to a house that has a raised bed, and there's very little growing in it right now. It's very shady, but apparently the previous owner has used that to burn landscape waste. There doesn't appear to be any debris, just a lot of ash.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering when that is tilled, do we need to try to remove that ash, or can that just be worked into the soil to be used for a shade garden?
It really shouldn't be a problem if it was just wood ash. There's not an issue. If somebody actually was burning a lot of stuff and he had a lot of ash, it can raise the pH, which sometimes we don't really like that. But if they were just doing kind of on a here, there, and everywhere, kind of doing a little burning, the ash actually adds a little potash, adds a little potassium, so it actually adds some nutrients to the soil. So usually we don't worry about it at all. So that's not an issue. If it was like, 4 feet deep or something like that, I'd worry about it. But at a small level, so I'd just go ahead and till it in. You should be fine.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We have maybe 5-6 minutes left in this part of Focus 580 with Sandy Mason. So, again, if you have questions, you can give us a call, 333-WILL or 9455, and toll-free 800-222-WILL. Something that you would like to mention?
Yeah, actually, just a couple things. You know, it's one of those things that sometimes people have a lot of interest in organics, and there actually is on this Monday, August 20th, the First Fruits Farm in Mahomet, in cooperation with the U of I Extension, and as well as the College of ACES and U of I and the Midwest Organic Farmers Cooperative, is having a farm tour at First Fruits Farm. And so it really is an interesting story in the fact that they try to grow everything organically, although they're not certified. They try to grow everything organically. And then they also have a restaurant where they use all that produce. So they're truly taking it from the farm, from the garden into, you know, into a restaurant. So that's really a very interesting thing. It runs from 10 to 3, August 20th at First Fruits Farm in Mahomet. If you go to the website, actually there is $20 per person, but it does include lunch, obviously, from the farm, so you can't get much fresher than that. And actually, if you go to the College of ACES website, you can go into that and find that particular program. So First Fruits Farm on August 20th. And so it should be very interesting. And I also want to mention that the Idea Garden, our Master Gardener Idea Garden, is celebrating its 10th anniversary, 10 years.
Really?
The Idea Garden. I know it's hard to believe it's been around. But on September 16th, which is a Sunday from 2 to 4, we're having a party. So we want to invite everybody who's interested and has supported us over the years at the Idea Garden. So we want people to come out. So September 16th, we're going to have a lot of fun. It's also, I know you know this, but it's also the 50th anniversary of the plastic lawn ornament, the flamingo lawn ornaments.
I did not know that.
So
that is wacky stuff. I did not know that.
Plastic lawn ornaments. So, of course, we have to have a flamingo decorating contest. So you can come out and see lots and lots of flamingos decorated in different ways.
Okay.
So that's on September 16th.
I will be out of the country, so I'm not going to be able to attend, but
I'll send you pictures.
Oh, okay. Oh, one more caller at least. Urbana, line number one. Hello. Go ahead.
Hi.
Hello.
Yes. I have a small little garden plot, and I have some tomatoes, which are doing great, but none of my squash, my zucchinis, or my cucumbers, or my pumpkins, or my watermelons are producing anything. They're flowering like crazy,
right.
And then the blossoms drop.
Yeah. Now, you know that they're male and female flowers?
Yeah.
I don't know when you planted these. Did you plant them in May or thereabouts? Or
The end of May, and there's more than one of each of the plants.
Right. Right. But you can tell on those guys. So when they're first growing, most of the flowers that are produced are male. So they don't do anything. They just sort of, well, that goes to show you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. I was waiting for that.
Well, they do something important eventually. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so those male flowers would just fall off. They don't do anything. And then what you'll see later on, you'll see female flowers. And you can tell the female flowers because there's a swollen area right behind the flower. You can see a little baby squash right there. So if you have... So what I'm wondering is that they've just been growing a lot. You have a lot of male flowers, and then the female flowers are coming later. So I would really look in there and see if you have any female flowers, and I'd almost bet you probably do, and you just need a little bit more time to get it going. So if the plants look healthy, then I'd just sort of wait them out a little bit, and you just hit a little later season than some.
Okay.
Okay? Sure.
All right, thank you. Next is Champagne. This is line number two. Hello.
Hi. Hey, the 16th is Mexican Independence Day, too.
Mexican Independence Day. Oh, we'll have to work that in. We'll have Mexican flamingos or something.
Decorate them in the color of the Mexican flag.
There you go.
Okay.
Thanks. Right. That was important.
We do have time here maybe for one caller if somebody wants to call real quick. Was there anything in particular?
Well, I just happened to think about the squash and stuff. You always have to make sure they have plenty of good pollinators there, and that's the other part to that. And I would think the bees have been very active because we've had plenty of sunshine and that kind of thing, but that would be the other thing why sometimes the flowers, why it may not produce, is because. But I wouldn't think that was an issue.
We have
but
had
I thought
some
I'd that
pretty
out
hot temperatures. Is that can
they,
that be
know,
a factor?
Bees are fine as long as they get water and stuff. They do well in heat. They don't like cold, rainy weather, and we certainly haven't had that.
So. Okay, maybe we just might talk a little bit about turf grass if people are thinking about trying to get a new lawn going, or maybe they just have particular areas they want to reseed. We're approaching the time.
Sure.
Probably now it's way too hot. I don't think grass is going to Well, it germinates very well
but usually,
at these temperatures.
Right, right. But this is the time. We generally, actually, it's even a better time than in the springtime because generally we start getting into cooler temperatures and we get into some good rain. So certainly by the end of August and certainly into September is usually a pretty good time to think about seeding a lawn if that's what you're going to do. So it's we have a lot less weed seed pressure, and so generally it's a much better time than in the spring if you're actually going to start a brand new lawn. So this would be the time to do it. And certainly, as you said, the spots, those kind of areas, and that's always a good way, you know, if you have weed problems, you got to get good grass in there or you're always going to have weed problems. So this is the time to thicken up the lawn
right.
as well.
And are there certain temperatures though, if you say like if, you know, it's going to be in the 90s, you're just going to say that's a little hot, so you might want to wait a little bit.
We'd like to have it more if it was in the 85 would probably be the kind of the top temperature. Why don't we start getting into the more regular 80s rather than these 90s we've been doing? That would actually be better. So if you could certainly look at the forecast and see what's going on there, and that would be a good time.
Okay. Well, we'll finish up here. I do want to mention, though, if there are people who have more of these kind of questions, that actually there'll be more discussion of plants, particularly herbs, vegetables, flowering plants, coming up on the Afternoon Magazine. Chuck and Di are going to be here.
The Upchuck?
Chuck Voigt and Diane Noland. And Chuck is the guy, this is the guy that in his garden, he's got 30 different kinds of garlic and 87 sweet potatoes. And he knows, this is a man who knows his vegetables.
I know he does.
So particularly, if the person who's having the zucchini problem would be able to listen and call in this afternoon, maybe Chuck would have something to say about that.
Sure. No, that would be great.
And then, of course, Diane hosts this program called Illinois Gardener on our companion station, WILL-TV, Thursday nights, 7 o'clock. It's a live show. Sandy is on the show sometimes. They also have people from the U of I and from various garden centers around the area. It's a live show, and there's an opportunity to call in with questions as in on this program. So that's another kind of resource that we have for gardeners, and it's on every week. And then Sandy will be back next month. We'll do it again. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Sandy Mason is a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. She's with us once a month. We talk about lawn and garden care.